and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Tri Alive here on Blog Talk Radio. Our show is about triathlons, goal setting, the Be Alive message, and more. And I am joined by my co-host. Her name is Casey Randall. She is the founder of Be Alive here in Alaska. Casey, how's it going?
It's going great. Good morning, Robert. How are you doing?
I am well, thank you. How is the weather down there in Anchortown?
I know, we always talk about the weather, but it's so much fun because right now things are just, they're still melting. I can't believe we still have quite a bit of snow as I look out my window. I bet you have more. Are you still stepping over your knees in snow, or is it melting up there?
You know, we have a lot of melt up here. Almost all of the snow is melted in the dog yard. We still have huge piles from where we plowed, but that's a good thing because we now have six beehives here, and we're expecting four more this weekend. So snow and bees don't make the best mix.
Right. Oh, my gosh. I forgot about all your bees that you raise and all the great honey that you get. We're going to have to talk about that sometime because we would like to raise bees or keep bees ourselves, but you've done that for a couple of years now, right?
Yeah, this is going into, I guess, our third year, maybe our fourth year now. And, you know, every year I try to increase our hives by two, but my wife, Michelle, has put her foot down. She says, absolutely not. 10 is the most we can possibly have because she does not want to go out there and check the hives when we go on vacation. She's here alone.
Oh, my goodness. You sound like us with chickens, you know, Robert. We have chickens, and you can only have so many, you know, you can only have so many chickens per, you know, the amount of land that you have here in Anchorage. But our chickens would just multiply so fast if I let my children decide because, you know, they sell their little eggs, and there's no lack of customers because everybody wants, you know, fresh eggs, which is wonderful. And then my kids get to keep the books and they get to do the math and they get good, you know, learn customer service. And it's been great. But if I let them use that money to just buy more chickens, we'd be overrun.
Right. And you know what's interesting with bees, Casey, is you're potentially dealing with something that could kill you in a matter of minutes. So I think Michelle has a very well-heated argument. There are probably 100,000 bees in our yard that I guess could kill anybody at any moment if they really wanted to. But that's a show for another day, I guess.
Wow. Wow. Well, that'll be fun. We'll definitely have to talk about that here in the future. But, you know, talking about more wildlife, we've been seeing a lot coming out, and we actually saw our first bear just a couple days ago up on Rainbow, which is a mountain just a little bit south down the Seward Highway, and we saw some sandhill cranes. We've been seeing a lot more moose out in the flat area, you know, eating the new growth, and I don't know, it's a fun time of year just to see what is coming out.
You know, it is awesome, especially up here in Alaska where we truly live in step with nature here. I always love seeing when the swans come back. And just a couple of days ago, Michelle and I were driving into Anchorage, and there's a little lake, so to say, on the side of the road, sort of by the Kinnick River there, and we saw a pair of swans there. So not only is that a beautiful sight to see, but that's definitely a sign that spring is back in Alaska. Isn't that right?
Well, for sure. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize, I guess, you know, especially from the city, like living here where I live, they don't realize that it doesn't take much to get out to actually see wildlife. I mean, some people have lived here for years and they've never seen a bear. But if you know, take your binoculars and you just take a little bit of time, you know, you can just sit on the side of the road, especially going down like the Seward Highway, just a few miles from here, and you know, you'll see doll sheep, you'll see mountain goats, you'll see bald eagles, golden eagles, and oftentimes brown and black bear. You know, they're just right up sunning themselves on the mountains and eating, and they're there, but people are usually zooming by in their cars, not really taking the time to even realize it.
You know, I totally agree with that. And, you know, one of the coolest things that we ever did, now talking about spring, this is actually a fall activity, but I guess it was the first couple of years we were here, we put in for the lottery for the Denali Road, and we took that in, I guess it was mid-September or so, and that was our first time ever seeing a lot of the Alaskan wildlife up close. We saw the bears that were running over the road, and of course, all sorts of moose and birds and goats and sheep and everything else. But that's an amazing thing to do if you get a chance to see it up here in Alaska, isn't it?
It is. We have done that multiple times. We haven't done it in a while, but I know that it is a lottery and you have to put in, right? Do you have to still mail in or can you do it online? Do you know the details of that?
You can mail it, you can do it online, and it is coming up. I think you do it sometime next month through mid-June or so. So it is a truly spring activity, and they do pick you by lottery. We have done it every year, and we've only got it once. So it is a very selective process. I'm sure that more and more people sign up to do it every year. I think it's like $25 or so to do it. But it's an all-day event. You drive as far as you want to on the highway there. But for us and for you as well, it's still, I don't know, 300 or more miles or so, 200 at least, up to the park, isn't it?
Right. You go in and you get to go all the way back. I think, depending on conditions, sometimes it snows and they have to close the road down because obviously they need to keep it safe when you're on the side of those mountains there. There aren't any guardrails. There's nothing keeping you, from going down. So they have
right.
to close it if it's spacey. But yeah, it's a great time. I mean, to put in for that lottery and get to take your family or if it's just yourself and, you get to freely drive on the road, stop and start where you want to. And you see all sorts of wildlife. I mean, I remember one time, we're sitting there and it doesn't even seem real because, we're stopped. We're looking at a brown bear and cubs. And then here coming up the road is a wolf just trotting along right up the road. And then all of a sudden, like as in it was just somebody cued it to happen. The ptarmigan just like erupted, the bear stands up and the wolf runs across the whole thing. And we were like, did we really just see all of that? It was pretty amazing.
That's like a National Geographic video right in front of your eyes, isn't it?
Right. And we're all just, sitting there with our mouths open, in disbelief, but it's a pretty neat thing. And I think that there's like about 4 days that they do it. If that's something you want to do, I'm sure you can look up on the National Park, Denali National Park's website. They probably have it on there, and that can probably give you all the
right.
information.
One other thing in regards to the Denali Highway there and going into the park, I had hoped to do it this year with my friend Adam. He does it with his wife usually every year, is they ride that highway on fat bikes, and it's about a 90-mile ride to the end, so about a 180-mile round trip, and they do it about this time of year, mid to late May or so, and they do a camping trip on their bikes, and I was so looking forward to doing it this excuse me, but I have a lot of school commitments, and I'm heading to California next month about the time that they're going to do it to do a swift water rescue course. But that would be an amazing camping trip if you're up for riding 180 miles or so on a fat tire bike. And just imagine what you could see this time of year when all the snow is starting to melt and everything is popping up for spring. I bet it's absolutely beautiful.
Right. Now, and that's the one in the park. They're going to ride or are they going to ride on the Denali Highway? Which one are they doing?
I guess that isn't the Denali Highway, but the same route that you take for the lottery, I guess that's the Denali Park Road, I guess what that is. And they ride that all the way to the campground there at the end. I know there's a lake. I can't think of the name of the lake down there. But they ride there and then they camp. Wonder Lake. And they camp there for a couple of days and they ride back and then camp, up and back at least once as well. So it's about a week-long trip. But, a lot of people, especially for the lottery, they don't see it until fall when all the leaves are changing, the brilliant golds and whatnot with all of the willow trees and the aspens and cottonwoods and all that. But just imagine what you would see as life really pops up in the early spring. I think that would be totally awesome.
Right. And again, I know some people don't like looking through binoculars, but man, the things you can see, take your binoculars, you have a spotting scope or something, but we've even watched from the from the road there, you know, doll sheep just crashing into each other with their, you know, their massive horns. And to be able to witness that from far away where, you know, there's the human impact isn't on them. So they're not deterred by anything, and they're just, you know, living their life how they do. It's pretty neat to watch.
It is. You know, it occurs to me as we're talking on these last few shows, we sound like tour guides of Alaska, don't we?
We're pretty good here, you know. I think we're advertising the state well. Maybe we don't know
yeah,
it, and more people will be coming to see us or seeing Alaska because of what we say.
Yeah, maybe we can get a little sponsor from the Tourism Bureau or something like that. I don't know. I guess I guess we're doing our little part here on our little show for sure. So let's switch gears a little bit. You wanted to talk a little bit about spring cleaning, and that doesn't necessarily mean opening up the windows and cleaning the house. That also means, you know, setting new goals, starting new things. What's on your mind there, Casey?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking about. And so, of course, looking around my house, I see lots of actual cleaning I need to do. But when I was thinking about it, I was like, what kind of things can I just declutter my own life of? And then I started, you know, doing some Google searches. And actually, this quote popped up that I really liked. And it said that the price of anything is the amount of life you exchange for it. And that's by Henry David Thoreau. And that just really got me thinking, you know, the price of anything is the amount of life you exchange for it. And what does that have to do with spring cleaning and clutter? Well, a lot of times I think we all, you know, things creep into our life. We fill up our life with things that we don't realize might be overwhelming us or getting in the way of us reaching those goals. And I don't know, it set me down my own kind of course of spring cleansing. But I mean, when I say that, does anything start popping up for you? I mean, do you have any spring cleaning or clutter in your life?
You know, when you said that, it occurred to me to think about all of the mental clutter that we carry around, especially today with so much going on the internet, and, you know, we're attached to our phones, and, you know, there's some type of information just being flooded in all the time. And I think there's a lot of that unnecessary noise that goes on in our lives, in particular, you know, sort of mentally. And we talk about going on these trips all the time on this show, whether it's, you know, multi-day expeditions or just going to the mountains with your kids and doing hiking or fishing or whatever folks do to sort of declutter their lives. I think that's a very important thing. And, you know, so many people these days, even when they do get away, they cannot remove themselves from all of that extra stuff, whether it's, you know, being attached to our social media or having four or five cameras with us and GoPros. And I'm guilty of the same thing because I love to share our adventures with our family and friends. But just having all that extra stuff that's just constantly flooded in into our lives, I think, is something that a lot of folks could sit back and think, how can I remove some of this nonsense, I guess is a great word for it, from our lives that we don't necessarily need all the time.
Exactly. And, you know, I can totally relate to all of that, but to the, you know, trying to, I need this camera, or I need to take the GoPro, or I need my binoculars, or, you know, you can try to fill up your, you know, you fill up your car or your bag with so much stuff, and then, you know, you see something that you want to, oh, I want to take a picture of that, and then which one do I use, you know, whereas, oh my
right.
gosh, if you had nothing, if you didn't have any of those things, you might just sit back and just really enjoy it, or the simple, I pull out my camera and I just take the one picture. So I think there's so much to be said for taking a step back and saying, I don't have to get rid of all my stuff, but how can I make things, you know, more simple? How can I enjoy the moment more? And, you know, clutter actually has an impact on our brain. I mean, I guess we know this, but to actually read it and see that there's been studies done and that physical clutter in your surroundings actually competes for your attention. And when it does that, then you actually have a decreased performance. So when we think about something, maybe, why can't I get this done? Or I've been meaning to do this. I set this goal and I keep, you know, not being able to succeed at it. Well, maybe it's time to step back and say, what is holding me back from it? And I just think about, you know, we talk about exercise a lot on here. And, you know, when you go to bed at night, it may sound so good to say, I'm going to get up in the morning and exercise. But if you don't plan or prepare, if your shoes aren't out, if your clothes aren't there, if you don't have a plan of attack, what you're going to do, you're probably not going to do it when you wake up. And a friend recently had this suggestion, and it made me laugh, but it's actually, I haven't tried it yet, but I might. And she said, sleep in your work clothes. Workout clothes. And I thought, what? And then it kind of made sense. Well, you're already ready to work out. You know, you just got to jump out of bed if you're a morning workout person. But, you know, maybe we have to sometimes go to those, what we might call extremes to get us going. Because the hardest part usually is starting, right?
Right. You know, Casey, I'm taking a sports psychology class this semester at UAA, and one of the things that we're doing is developing a sort of a client profile for ourselves in regards to sports and performance. And some of those things that we talk about are sort of that self-talk, motivation, visualization, all of those sorts of things to sort of get us maybe not necessarily in the zone to work out or to do well at a sport, but at least get us in the right mindset. And as you mentioned, if there's a lot of extra stuff going on in there and, you know, sort of interfering with your routine, obviously you're not going to be able to perform well. And I know that you have done some pretty high profile sporting events in your life. You've done triathlons and Mount Marathon and all of those things. Can you speak on that a little bit? Like, if something's going on in your life, whatever it is, how small or how large it is, how does that interfere with your individual performance when you're thinking about that? Say, you know, your kids are at home sick, or, you know, you're having car troubles or money troubles or whatever. How does that impact your performance on your sporting events that you took part in?
Well, it's interesting that you should ask that question, because I really feel like that's how things are in my own life right now, as far as there's a lot of activities that I love to do and that I did do, and I'd like to get back to doing some of them. You know, different priorities when, you know, before you have children and then you have kids, and I mean, I wouldn't give up the things I do with my family for the world. But I do find it harder to find time to be in shape and participate in those activities. And so that, you know, I think this is part of my decluttering and spring cleaning, is realizing that, you know, that self-care, and it's okay to say, I'm going to take some time to go for this run, and I'm not going to feel guilty while I'm doing it, because it's going to help me be a better mom and a better person. But again, getting those things started, it's really easy to fall out of that routine, because there's a big word in there called guilt, or what we feel like we should be doing. And sometimes taking that time for yourself can be very hard. And that is connected to this whole decluttering, because it's our perceptions of things. It's our emotions and how we connect them to the things we have or what we should be doing. So yeah, I mean, there are people who are very successful who still have many things going on in their life, but I think they can, you know, if you have a goal, it's how bad you want it, right? I'm finding that out a lot, Robert, in my life. How bad do you want something, and how do you put it, not necessarily first, because there's lots of things we need to take care of in our life, but how do you make it happen? And I know you have that with your moving up to Alaska, your kennel, everything you're doing. I mean, your big expedition, you had to put a lot of those things in the forefront, right?
I did. And, you know, it's interesting when you had mentioned sometimes you need the me time. But when you have family and young kids in particular, that is a heavy weight to pull, whatever it is, whether we're going to, you know, do our own thing on our me time or, you know, just consume ourselves with our family lives. And, you know, there's good and bad for both ways. You know, you could argue on either side of that, which is sort of a great way to find balance. But you know what I do, Casey, is when I go out with my dogs, I try my absolute best to remove myself from everything else. I like to put on my music. I like to go out there and just be one with the dogs and just try to remove myself from everything that's happening around. But of course, you know, when you're out there and you're alone and you're hours into a training routine, your mind very quickly can drift back to sort of the issues of the day. They may not even be problems, but it's just that sort of thing that you have to think about. You know, I've got to do this and this and this and this in order to, you know, to move on to the next task. And that can be very difficult. And, you know, that clutter thing is one that we could definitely talk about on and on. You know, as I sit here listening to you and talk with you about this, I am just sort of doing a mental checklist in my mind of all the shows that we could do about these individual topics that we just mentioned. I think we got 6 months or so of shows lined up just in our conversation this afternoon.
Right. And it's, you know, it's a big thing to tackle, right? I mean, when you just say, I'm going to declutter something, and then you really get into saying, I'm really going to declutter my life. I mean, you don't do that in one day, right? And you don't do it in just one step. You need to kind of let things set in. I mean, I think a lot of times as you start diving into that, one thing leads to another. And then I think the first thing is giving yourself permission to let go, giving yourself permission to say, do I want this in my life? You know, do I need this in my life? And then once you have said, okay, nope, I'm willing to try something different, I think it gets easier to let things go. And then when you let one thing go, it opens up space for something else to come in, not necessarily to clutter that back up, but maybe just that open space is just something you haven't had, if that makes sense. The open space is kind of an out there concept, but does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. And, you know, if we can come all the way back real quick and talk about spring cleaning, and we said at the top that it wasn't necessarily about spring cleaning your house or your, you know, sort of the environment that you live in, but do you have one tip for spring cleaning, you know, a space that may be useful for other folks? And I'll give you one of mine.
Okay, well, just one quick one that is take home from today as far as actual stuff, like physical stuff, is pick whatever room you want to pick in your house, just pick one, and put a box there, an empty box, that when you see something that just doesn't have a place, put it in that box. Or if it's something that you're like, I want to donate this, or I'm not sure where this goes, just kind of start filling up that box. And then see what you get after maybe a week. And then you can kind of take a look at that. And that might really help you clean up a space and be better organized.
Right. You know, that's a great tip. And, you know, one thing that we do, it's sort of a mushing thing, but one thing that we do every spring about this time, and I'm sure you know, living in Alaska, just about how nasty breakup can be, and it's even worse in a dog kennel, is we make sure and not only put all of our stuff away that's sort of been strewn about for the entire winter. You know, we're finding harnesses here and necklines there and gang lines that need to be repaired or thrown out. But one of the things that I find great satisfaction in regards to cleaning is finally getting around to putting away all of my tools that have been all over the garage for 5 months. You know, we're constantly grabbing wrenches and hammers and screwdrivers and all of this, and we just lay them down all over the place because we're usually doing it in the middle of doing something else, whether it's hooking up a dog team or clipping nails or whatever we're doing with the dogs, and things just get all over the place, and it's just so nice to have things tidied up again in the springtime.
Well, and you probably realize, wow, we have all these. I mean, sometimes you don't even realize what you have when it's all over, because our brains just can't organize all of that when everything is a mess or, you know, disorganized. And so that's a great idea. And then you start putting it away. And just like if you clean your kitchen, what do? Most of the time, all of a sudden, you sit there and you want to cook and you want to destroy it again. You know, if you clean your bedroom, you sleep better. So it, you know, getting things organized actually makes us want to then use them or engage in what in our space. So yeah,
you know,
I think this is going to help us, Robert.
I can't tell you, Casey, how many sets of pliers I have and tape measures I have from not being able to find one for one reason or another, and I have to run to the Home Depot next time I'm in town and buy a new tape measure or a new pair of pliers or whatever, I probably have 10 of each. And that's usually from just being sort of scatterbrained, like I said, doing whatever we're doing in the moment and not having that time to go, to run back into the garage and put our tools away. Because you know, you've been around sled dogs enough. Once you start hooking those guys up, you can't take a second to go back to the garage to do something else, can you?
Right. No, you definitely have your hands full. And like you said, you find all these pliers that you have, and thank goodness you have them all because you need them. But it's kind of a funny thing, just like when someone looks in their closet and it's stuffed full and they say, I have nothing to wear. I mean, that's that organization that, you know, it's just, we're humans are funny creatures, but we always have room for improvements. And hopefully we're making some of those or helping people make some of those improvements while we talk, which is really fun.
Right. Real quick, we have just a few minutes left. I know we want to mention two more topics here on the show. The first one is we talked about several times on our show about my expedition at UAA. I am doing a presentation for my internship this Monday, coming Monday, April 24th, I believe, at 6 p.m. in the PSP, the Professional Services Building, room 106. I believe it is. I'll make sure we put a link on the show page just to make sure. But I'll send out a reminder if anybody's interested in coming. If you are unable to come, I know we have lots of listeners that listen outside of Alaska. One of the participants that came along is a journalism student, and his project for one of his classes was to do a video for our expedition, and he put together a pretty cool 10-minute or so little video about our trip. It's got some drama in it. It's got some, you know, some happy parts, some sad parts. It's an excellent little video, and I'm so proud to have Connor along, not only as our videographer and photographer on the course, but also as a participant. And I know you're planning on coming on Monday, and you will be one of the first few that sees this little documentary. But afterwards, we plan on putting it up on YouTube or Facebook or somewhere so everybody can see it, because he worked real hard on this, and he's just a journalism student working his way through. So he's learning as he goes, but I think it's a real cool tribute to our little trip.
Well, I am very excited to see the presentation. And now, Robert, is it like a family-friendly presentation? Is it anyone come or what?
Yep, anybody can come. There are three presentations. I am one of the three. Each semester, every, you know, a group of students does internships, and a requirement in order to finish your internship is to present to the public, and of course that is open to anyone, and it can be your family, your friends, your mentor, whoever wants to come along can come. And I've been there. I've been to a bunch of these in the last 4 years. Some of them are pretty big events where they have food and the whole nine yards, when they have, you know, 10 or 11 people presenting. And then others is just pretty an intimate affair in a classroom, and, you know, we hook up a projector and each of us talk about what we've done and what we've learned. But this year I think it's going to be a little smaller, but yeah, you're welcome to bring your kids, your family, whoever, because not only myself but also my fellow students have put a tremendous amount of work in not only their internship that they completed, but all of these people are our future community leaders. And, you know, in a PE department, there are PE teachers and our yoga instructors and our fitness consultants and our, you know, our guides on our trips that we talk about. All of these things, most of these young folks, and I'm 45, so I won't be doing much of this, but all of these young folks will be, you know, sort of the emerging leaders in our community, don't you think?
Yeah, no, and I just can't wait to see the pictures, more pictures of your expedition and all the growth that happened through that. And I'm looking forward to it. So thanks again for inviting me, and now other people know that it is too. And what, it's at 6 o'clock? Is that when it starts?
6 o'clock, and it's supposed to be from 6 to 9. Each of us have 45 minutes to present. There's a question and answer session as well. So definitely come with your questions, Casey, because often college students are a little, you know, their fellow students. So ask away whatever you have. Okay, real quickly, I know you want to talk about a couple of guests that are coming up. They're going to do an Alaskan Man race. I'm unfamiliar with that. Tell us what that is.
All right. Well, it is the first year for this, and it's called Alaska Man Extreme Triathlon. I know most people have heard of Ironman Triathlon, but this is called Alaska Man Extreme Triathlon. And it is going to be, it's here in Alaska, and it's on July 15th this year. And they're billing themselves as the hardest long course triathlon in North America. And so this is a big deal, Robert. And I have a couple friends who are doing it, and actually what's it's just awesome they're doing it. And then one of them is actually having like a team Be Alive, and she wants her whole support crew to be in Be Alive. So that's going to be, you know, getting the message out there. But I just wanted to quick tell you what they do, and then we'll talk more about it next week. But they're going to do a 2.4-mile swim in Resurrection Bay. That's in Seward, yes, in the cold ocean that is going to be like 55 degrees for them swimming. And then they're going to do a 112-mile bike on the Seward Highway with, let's see, the bike has 4,131 feet of elevation gain. And then they get to do a 26.2-mile run. And I don't know if you have heard about this, but they actually go up Mount Alyeska twice on the run.
Wow. Yeah,
so
you know, I read about this. You know, I read about this when it first came out, and I thought, oh, my goodness. You know, what a extreme triathlon this would be. And you and I both know what type of ride that's going to be on a bike from Seward, and I guess they're going to go, you know, 60-odd miles or so north of Seward towards Anchorage and then turn around and go back. There is a tremendous amount of up and down mountains on that ride. And I can only compare and contrast to what they do in Kona, where the, you know, the Ironman Championship is. It's relatively flat. You know, there are a few up and down hills, but it's pretty much a flat mountain. I can only imagine what these guys and gals are going to be doing, not only on the swim in the very cold ocean there, but just that ride, and then of course that up and down of the major ski hill here in Girdwood. That is truly an extreme event, and I can't wait to talk to these guys.
Right, and so we're gonna. Erica Bennett is doing it, and then Jason Moore is also doing it. And I mean, of course, everyone's first time because it's the first time for the race, but these guys are both lifelong Alaskans, and so it'll just be really fun to have them on the show and hear about what they've been doing to train and how excited or terrified or whatever they're feeling about this race. I think they're both going to do wonderful, and they're both great people. So we look forward to having them on next week to talk about that.
Excellent, for sure. I always love your guests. You find all of these amazing, cool, inspiring people, and you're much more in the know in that world than I am. And I welcome talking to all these folks because, you know, this is something that I think is going to change the triathlon landscape. Because I don't think anything else like this anywhere else in the country. As you mentioned, the most extreme triathlon in North America.
Yeah, and there, you know, it's right here in our backyard, right? So it'll be a lot of fun to cheer them on, and they're crazy in a wonderful way, and it'll be fun.
Excellent. Okay, Casey, we're out of time, and I do want to apologize real quick for my dinger going off on our show here. I'm getting a whole bunch of text messages. It looks like from clients, somebody's asking a bunch of dog training questions. So apologies for that. We try to do our most professional job that we can, and there it goes again. Casey, we will talk next week on Wednesday to have your guests on. Until then, be alive, and we'll see you next time.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of my co-host, Casey Randall, this is Robert 424 Try Alive. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.